verses 10, verse 1, and verse 6 and 8. And then we'll look at chapter 11 and the first few verses there. Now these are the generations of sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And unto them were born sons after the flood. The sons of Japheth, Gomer, and so forth, Magog, and Madai, Javan, Tubal, Meshach, Tyrus. You know, I don't understand where it goes to. That was God, though, for some reason, goes to Japheth first, and before he comes to Shem, which will be a little further over. But in verse number 6 and 8, look at that. He says, and the sons of Ham, he goes to Ham now, and the sons of Ham were Cush, Mizraim, Put, and Canaan. And then in verse number 8, he says, and Cush begat Nimrod. That's our character tonight, Nimrod. He's the fellow that we want to talk about. And Cush begat Nimrod. And he began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. Even as Nimrod. All right, look at chapter 11. It says, and the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. And it came pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, something like we would say, come on, let's do this. Come on, let's do this. Go to, let us make brick and burn them. That is thoroughly. It is until they're hardened stone. It goes on and says, and they had brick for stone and slime had they for mortar. That slime there is the same thing that you find elsewhere talking about asphalt or pitch. And they said, go to, again, come on, let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven. And let us make us a name. Let us make us a name. That's man, isn't it? Right off the bat. A new world, but man hadn't changed, had he? Let us make us a city. Let us make us a name. Lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. And go back up there where he's talking about building a tower. Verse 4, he says, let us build us a city, and let us build us a tower whose top may reach. And you'll notice that it's both words there. May reach is in italics. Translators supplied that. That's not in the original. So if you left that out, it would read like this, and they said, go to, let us build us a city and a tower whose top unto heaven. And some of the word scholars have translated that whose top is like unto the heaven. Like unto the heaven. And let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad and so forth. And some have, in this speculation, I don't know that you got a whole lot, like we've said in other passages here, there's a lot of mystery through what we've been reading. But they said that making that tower, whose top is like unto heaven, in other words, they said that they, it appears they might have begun to be star worshipers at this time, mapping out their destiny, as some people still do, by the study of the stars. And so they seem to think that that this making a tower whose top is like the heavens has reference to engraving a zodiac, a picture of the constellation. And that way they could study how the constellation is laid out and govern their future with this type of thing. But anyway, he goes on and says in verse number, getting it back down to verse number 5, and the Lord came down to see the city, to see about this thing. That's kind of the way I read that. And he said in verse number 6, and the Lord said, behold, the people is one. They become one in mind, one in language, one in purpose. And they have all one language, and this they began to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. So he says, let's go down. Verse number 7. And there we'll confound them. We'll confuse them. We'll break in on their plans and their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So what he did here is he confused their language. And all of a sudden they couldn't understand one another. Everybody spoke a different language. And so where does their plan go now? They can't communicate with one another, so their purpose in building whatever they were going to build, the tower and so forth, is thwarted by God. And what they do now is they all just babble toward one another. Nobody can understand. That'd be some kind of a world to live in, wouldn't it? You couldn't understand nobody, what they're saying. We may be getting back to that pretty soon. I don't know if anybody will be able to talk or not. I see them going down the streets and across the front of the table from one another, and they're using their thumb for language. They use this thumb language. Have you ever seen that? Thumb language. And they don't say a word. They just mashing these little buttons and communicate one to another. I sit in a restaurant when I first noticed this, I think, some time ago. And there sat a couple, and they never said a word to one another. They were just thumb language. After a while, that may become confusing. I don't know. But the Lord sure did it here, didn't he? He did it here. It's a mystery, isn't it? There's so much mystery. So much mystery. I tell you what, it's really interesting to watch these things as they progress and try to come to some understanding of what maybe God's doing and what maybe he's going to do. We know that he's going to ultimately triumph over this world. The victory's already been won. It was won at the cross. And it all has been given to Jesus. So let's think about this for a little while. You see, that what we see here coming out of Nimrod coming out of Cush is this fellow by the name of Nimrod. Cush, of course, being the first son mentioned here in the genealogy, the first son of Ham. And then from out of Cush comes Nimrod. And so the purpose seems to be picked up here and brought out of the old world that's been destroyed by the flood. And now the progress is moving forward in this new world. And it seemed to be the same principle at work here, the same purpose and principle at work here. They're trying to do something that leaves God out. And that's why he destroyed the old world. They were going about marrying, eating, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage, just a common life of common necessities, what we all are accustomed to doing. But as we look back into that old world, they were doing all these common things. God gives us the idea there, but they were doing this without any acknowledgement or concept of God. Same thing's taking place here. Whatever's beginning to take place here and progress here and go forward in the plan that's been made, Nimrod's the leader. He's heading this thing up. Again, it's a movement without God. And we have these cases all through the scripture, where people finally divorce themselves from any idea whatsoever of the creator, of the governor of the universe, and they're going about their business to do their own thing without any acknowledgement of God. We can see these ideas even in our day, the day we live, can't we? I believe we can. So the curse is expanded then. It comes out of the old world into the new world. Cush begat Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty, mighty one. That's the way it really reads. That's the literal reading of it. And Nimrod began to be a mighty one in the earth. A mighty one in the earth. Some great man. And that's not nearly by his posterity. We do have his posterity listed here for us. And how it began to populate the earth. But we see also his ideology. It comes in to this new world. I'm talking about the ideology that Ham brought through the flood and generated through his offsprings. Think about this, Ham's posterity. You see, the most cursed man may have a numerous seed. Boy, he began to populate. To accumulate and populate the earth. And was taking over by population. A numerous seed. And yet he was the most cursed man in the new world. Coming out of the old and trying to perpetrate the same ideas that he received in the old world, in this new world. And so his ideology was to control. Man has that principle that goes with him all the way through, doesn't he? We see it. It seems always been the case, whatever era time you live in, whatever generation you live in, if you watch things as they progress, someone's always at the top of the heap. Some mighty one is always at the top of the heap trying to gain more clout, or control. So the name of the game is control. You see, I've said this before, Jason. You know, man can, he could amass all the wealth. He could amass all the wealth imaginable. But he's not satisfied if he has the wealth without control. He wants the power along with the wealth. And you can see this. You can see that. You can see how it works out with men. And as they go about their business doing whatever they do. And then, you know, so the most cursed man, I say, may have a numerous seed. And what is the result? Well, it only enlarges the curse. The curse. It's larger and larger, isn't that right? Don't you see that? Another thing here I thought about, you know, cursed ones bring out sometimes an imminent rebellion or an imminent rebellious seed to hasten vengeance. To hasten the vengeance. Verse number 8, I was looking at this back here in chapter number number 8 here in chapter 11. He says, and so the Lord scattered them abroad from hence upon the face of the earth, and they left off to build the city. So God interfered with them, didn't he? In other words, all they did was just as they amassed the population and mass power and wealth and what have you, all they did was hasten the vengeance of God. God's going to catch up after a while. I go, God cannot, you can't pull the wool over God's eyes, can you? Just no way. He'll catch up after a while. You know, this happens in small things and large things. This is, watch this. Watch the work of God. After a while, he comes into the picture. Whatever men might be purposing to do, if they're seeking power, whatever little aspect they have toward this thing, after a while, God will frustrate that. And they never are able to achieve their purpose. Why? Because God's vengeance catches up with them, as it did here. And the scripture says that, and Cush begat Nimrod. And then it says he, Nimrod, began to be a mighty one. Literally, a mighty one. Not a mighty hunter, but a mighty one. That's the ESV. In the earth. So the greatest judgments will not keep wicked ones from sin, though being but a little escaped from it. My soul, could you imagine how close this is back to the flood? These people had almost a one-on-one experience with what took place with those that were destroyed by that devastating flood. And yet, here comes sin. Sin falls right into the fray. And so the greatest judgment, I've always thought about this too, a man can go under, he can come under some kind of terrible, terrible calamity, you know, physically wise, and we could call it judgment, you know, and some kind of devastating disease or whatever, knocked down. You know, I was telling somebody, well, I've got where I do this quite often, though. It gives you an opportunity to say something for God, you know. I mean, folks always, especially if you're going through things, you know, like this deal I went through with the prostate cancer, you know, and I bet you I've been asked 50 times. It's one of the first things out of so many of my mouth is, how you doing? How you doing? You know what I begin to answer? How I begin to answer? I begin to answer, as far as I know. As far as I know. I'm doing okay. But, I remind him, I say this, Tony, a lot. I say, you know, Father, And as far as he knows, he can be doing all right today and dying tomorrow. I said, so the bottom line is, as far as I know, I'm doing right well, but only God knows what's going on. You know, only God knows what's going on in our lives, you know. You know, all of a sudden a disease that's ready to take down the body is a mystery there. It's there. It's been there. And all of a sudden it shows itself. And so there's devastation. So judgments will not keep wicked ones from sin. So being but a little escape from those judgments. No, sir. Never like to use a man's demise. I was cautious about doing this way back yonder, because I saw so many flukes, you know, just so many just wasn't sincere, wasn't real, you know. Get a man to make a profession of faith that's laying in a hospital bed, not knowing where he's going to live today or tomorrow or not, and just get a profession of faith out of him. That's not a good practice. But of course, Baptists are notorious about this. Notorious about this. I mean, if somebody get down sick, I guarantee it won't be long till there's a Baptist buzzard perched upon his bedpost, trying to get him to say something to give others comfort that he might have come to some kind of profession in the Lord, you know. That's a practice. I know I had a real close relative, very close, passed away some time ago. And I had the preacher that the folks had called on to do the funeral come to me. He said, how about let me know? He said, you know him better than anybody. He said, tell me, did he ever make a profession of faith? Did he ever make a faith? I knew what he wanted. He was fishing around. He'd already asked a couple of the man's relatives, you know. And he had one man finally told him he did. He made a profession. He was the one that squeezed the profession out of him. And so he gave that preacher a little comfort, a little encouragement. Would he have something to say that would encourage the people that the man was all right? Well, if you don't know, why enhance a possible untruth, a lie, in order to make others feel that everything's all right? Why not just go on about your business if you know the gospel, if you know anything about the gospel, and talk about the gospel and the hope being in the gospel of Jesus Christ alone? I had a fairly good close friend years ago ask me one time. I was working in Lockheed at that time. He came by my workstation. He said, Terry, you going to preach my funeral? He's dead now. And I don't know. At that time, of course, he had a heart disease. And I don't know how sincere he was. But he asked me that. He said, you going to preach my funeral? And I called his name. I said, friend, you're preaching your funeral right now. Every day, you're preaching your funeral. No, I said, I can't preach your funeral. I said, you preach your funeral. I said, if I have anything to do at your death, it'll be to talk to folks about Christ. I said, I'll talk to the living. Be no use talking about the dead. Talk to the living. They may be the next down the funeral parlor aisle in a box. Well, let's look on a little further here. So only one generation removed from the flood, population expanded, and with it came immediate immediate explosion of wickedness. Sin's not in the world. Sin's in the heart of men. And they make the world whatever they are themselves. Isn't that right? So one generation removed from the flood, population exploded, I guess. Expanded. That's amazing, isn't it? Out of 3 men, God says, I'm going to populate the earth. And he did. And he began immediately doing so. Yet, with that expanded population, there came an immediate explosion of wickedness. Another thing, under a wise providence, God's all wise, isn't he? Under a wise providence, power and violence is permitted to rise and spring in the earth. Now that's a mystery to me. I mean, he showed us how quickly he could cut it off in the old world, how he could destroy every bit of it with the exception of a handful of people. And yet you would come into this new world, and here come these characters, these great ones like Nimrod, into the picture, and God lets them have at it. He just lets them go. It's amazing, isn't it? You know, I don't know where we, honestly, I don't know where we really know how to appreciate the grace of God or not, like we should. We who've experienced the grace and mercy of God. You know, God's let multitudes upon multitudes that you've been associated with over your lifetime, he's let them go their way. He's thrown the reins upon their necks. And like Nimrod, he's allowing them to do their own thing. And what's their end? Well, we'll see. It's like Nimrod, we will see his end. But anyway, this is amazing. Another amazing mystery. Under a wise providence, a wise, all-wise, providential God who controls all things, he allows power and violence. He permits it to rise and spring in the earth. Another thing here, I thought, it is the property of the great in sin and earthly power to hunt to death God's saints. And if that's in the context of what we're talking about here, and some say that he was a hunter, a great hunter. And using the translation we have in the AV, but then he said he was a great hunter of men. He hunted down men. And he hunted down men to death. So I think possibly we might see that immediately here there was an attempt by the ungodly seed that actually comes right on up out of Cain, that faces off against the godly seed, which came all the way up out of Seth. And into the new world, that warfare started over. Here's a great enemy of the church, the people of God. And the possibility that the souls that he was hunting down and destroying were the saints of God in this new world. Don't know for sure, but that seems to be applicable here. And then another thing, God makes in vengeance the names of such wicked ones. He just makes it a proverb. And that's what we have here. He said, therefore, it is said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. That's just a proverb. In other words, he made a proverb out of his name. And down through the history, he furthered that proverb, that name, with other great ones, like Nimrod. This fella, like Nimrod, was a mighty hunter. You see that probably clearly there in verse number 9, and I guess it's chapter 10. You have to go back to chapter 10. Talking about Nimrod, and he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore, it is said, and here's the proverb, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. Another thing here. The beginning and chief of all the power of wicked ones is but confusion. Wicked ones are headstrong to fall into a state of absolute being confounded and confused out here somewhere. I never dreamed that our body of government would be in such a state today as we see it today, and this has come on rapidly, a state of confusion. I don't know where they're going. Would you have ever dreamed it would be having primaries? I thought that was back in the last one when 17 got involved in that thing in the Republican primary. Now in the Democratic primary, how many is it up to? 20? 20-something? 24? Can't keep count, can you? And it's not over with yet. We haven't even reached the primary yet. But the more that they amass in this thing, the more confused it becomes. They don't know what to do. That's judgment enough, isn't it? That's judgment enough. So the beginning, chief end of all the power of wicked ones is but confusion and the place of wickedness. Babel and Shinar. You see there in verse number 10. So the spread of cities really was merely the spread of group societies. Just group societies. All of a sudden you see all these cities coming into place here. Great outbreak of building cities. All this was under Nimrod's headship, his leadership, the mighty one. And so it was spread of his power and by his ideology. And the idea here was one world government. You know, we've heard a lot about that in our generation, haven't we? One world government. But it was already taking place way back over here. That's the whole objective of Nimrod. One world control. I'll amass enough power that I'll control this new generation coming out from the old world, which was destroyed by a flood. And I'll amass this thing by building societies, cities, groups. Keep them all somewhat bottled up, accumulated together. That was his idea. You know, wicked potentates are still invading others to enlarge themselves. Verse number 11. Look back there again in chapter 10. He says, out of that land went forth Asher and built Nineveh and the city of Rehoboth and Calah. Several years ago, I noticed that somebody built a new mega church up here. A group had built a new mega church up here somewhere north of Atlanta, I believe. It's been several years back. And they named it Rehoboth. Rehoboth. I thought, well, Wonder why they did that. Do you see any spirituality in that? That's, again, under the leadership and out of the ideology of this fellow Nimrod. People are strange. People are strange. Calvin said this. I'm going to give you this. Mr. Calvin said, John Calvin said, on this, out of that land went forth Asher. He said, it is credible that Asher was one of the posterity of Shem. And he goes on and says, and the opinion has been commonly received that he is here mentioned because when he was dwelling in the neighborhood of Nimrod, he was violently expelled. I don't know. But anyway, Calvin goes on and says, in this manner, Moses, who wrote all this, inspired of God, Moses would mark the barbarous ferocity of Nimrod. And truly, these are the accustomed fruits of the greatness which does not keep within bounds where has arisen the old proverb. Great kingdoms, the old proverb, is another proverb. Great kingdoms are great robberies. Kingdoms are seeking to expand themselves by robbing others. And what do? They rob others of their freedom to amass what you have under this idea of complete control. Then there's another thing here, going from what Calvin said. He said edifying cities and places of strength is really the wicked's security. Yeah, the stronger your confederacy with this particular group movement, the more you feel secured. That's where you have parties. You have parties, you know. Divide up in parties. And the stronger your party is, the more secure you feel. See how all this is absolutely... what's the word I want to use? The only security that we have, God provides that. The only true security that we have, God provides that. Our security is in Jesus Christ alone, not in a party, not in a mass. No, sir. And all else fails. All else fails. Another thing, great cities they may have, but such as are under the eye and judgment of God. He's watching it. It's only going so far as God permits it. He gives us evidence of this after case after case after case. You have the same idea with Sodom and Gomorrah. They built those two major cities in the plain. And there is where they felt secure. All of them became of the same mind, of the same idea, and divorced themselves completely of anything pertaining to God. Anything. And what happened there? Judgment. God came down. He came down. He sent a message to Abraham in the 19th chapter of Genesis. He said, as he came to visit Abraham while Abraham was sitting there in his tent, and Abraham asked the question, which led to, why are you here? And of course, he told him, I've got business. I came down to destroy those wicked cities. And he told Abraham that only give Abraham the opportunity to pray for his nephew, Lot, hoping that God would hear the prayer and deliver Lot. And he did, didn't he? That was a mercy, wasn't it? That was a mercy. So great cities, they have but such a, as under the eye of God, judgment. But look just a minute now, and we'll close here. At chapter 11, and I quote the ESV translation of this passage. It says, now the whole earth had one language and the same words. And as people migrated from the east, it says, found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. He says, and they said to one another, come on, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and bitumen, that's asphalt, slime for mortar. Then they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens. Some like to put it with its top like the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves. Let us make a name for ourselves. I'm quoting from the ESV. Lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower and the children of man which the children of man had built. And the Lord said this. He said, behold, they are one people. Yeah, one people without God, without any desire for God. I mean, God's church is a one people church, isn't it? But they're one in mind and one in accord, one in ideology, one in thought. And it all circles around Christ, isn't it? But this is not the case here. One people. All have one language. And this is only the beginning of what they will do. These are the words of God now. We don't put a stop to it. There's no end to this. And nothing that they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Come, God says. Let us go down. And there confuse their language, so that they may not understand one another's speech. I'd say that'd take care of this whole thing. God's so smart, isn't he? So wise. So the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of all the earth. They just went here and there and scattered everywhere. Might as well. Can't understand one another. They left off their purpose, their plan of building a city. Therefore, its name was called Babel. Babel. Because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. And from there the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. All right, here's the bottom line. So the sovereign came down and put an end to Nimrod and his one world movement. His one world government movement. You don't know, you won't read anything else about Nimrod after chapter 11. He's gone. His idea's gone. His society's gone. Why? Because God put an end to it. This is not my purpose. Verse 24. Thus says the Lord, your Redeemer, who formed you. This is out of Isaiah 44. Who formed you from the womb. I am the Lord who made all things. who alone stretched out the heavens, who spread out the earth by myself, who frustrates the signs of liars and makes fools of diviners, who turns wise men back and makes their knowledge foolish, who confirms the word of his servant and fulfills the counsel of his messengers, who says of Jerusalem, she shall be inhabited, and of the cities of Judah, they shall be built, and I will raise up the ruins thereof. That's God's purpose and plan. That's his purpose and plan for his people, for his church. And those plans and those purposes will never be frustrated. He'll continue to frustrate man's foolish notions and wicked ideas until his purpose is absolutely perfected in all the earth. There'll be no more Nimrods, no more great ones, because the great one will bring an end until his purpose is accomplished. All right, we'll stop here.